The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance. BTL, coming at you. Basscat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Monday, everybody. Welcome to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew, quite the week for you last week at Lake Conroe. We're going to get into that, but it is getting ready to get a little chilly here in Oklahoma.
I didn't even look. Is it going to get bad?
It's going to get bad, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah,
but
you get snowed in, you can practice your shaving.
Yeah, not good. Anyway, great shows lined up for this week. Today we're going to have the guy that got it done on Lake Lanier, Paul Mueller, spotted bass.
Not a surprise.
Lots of them.
He practices basically spotted bass fishing on Lanier, doing exactly what he did all winter long in Connecticut through the ice.
Yeah.
All spring and summer long through his wife. I mean, that tournament was in his wheelhouse. I expected him to do good. I mentioned that I thought he would do good. And in my opinion, the two best quote-unquote droppers on the Elite Series in Zaldane and Mueller with their electronics finished 1-2.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty entertaining. That final day, man, it looked miserable.
It did.
It looked really, really miserable.
It was interesting watching it on live, was seeing how those cold water spots came to the boat.
Yeah.
Several times I thought that they were playing it in slow motion.
Yeah.
And they weren't. It was just that slow wallow as they...
God, they were fat. Man, they were so fat. All right.
They were pretty fish.
On Tuesday, a lot of requests of the viewers and listeners. We're going to have Bradley Hallman in studio tomorrow breaking down Lake Toho, and then also getting his take on his performance on Lake Toho, of which was not up to par.
Probably not a happy camper.
No.
Three Oklahoma guys that you don't want to piss off.
He's one of them. Tommy Biffle's the other one.
Jason Christie. There's four that can be real grumpy. Jason Christie and Edwin.
Yeah. And then speaking of Edwin, and then on Wednesday, we're going to have the man that got it done on Lake Conroe. Edwin Evers will be live on BTL and get his take on everything that went down this past week on Lake Conroe. And I've got a clip that I want to show. We're going to talk a little bit about both, obviously, but we're going to get Paul on here in about 15 minutes via the phone. He was unable to get Skype set up when I spoke with him last night, so it's just going to be a phone interview.
An electronics guy, you can't get Skype set up?
Well, he didn't have internet access where he was staying at.
Okay.
So it wasn't a matter of him not being able to put Skype on his phone or his iPad or whatever.
Yeah.
It was just a connectivity issue. So Edwin yesterday, you know, it was kind of close.
It was close.
It was pretty close. And then there was...
You can't judge what's close and what's not because it's the second one.
Yeah.
But it appeared at times to be close.
Based upon what we know, it seems like it was pretty close.
Right. It was not a nail biter, but it was close.
It was close. And Sprague was trying to make a charge, and Duckett was trying to dink around.
Walker jumped into the mix.
Yeah.
And then Edwin picks up a drop shot and catches an 8-pounder.
That's what I'm going to show. It was pretty weird because he had been... Now, can you give the people a little bit of insight on these, what are they, like sub ponds that they were fishing?
Yeah, basically.
That Edwin was fishing?
You know, you have Lake Conroe, and there's like a series of cuts as you're going up lake on the left-hand side. And then at the back of all of these cuts is a bridge, so a pinch point. And then behind that bridge are flats with a small channel that they dug out so they can put more docks behind there. And then there's a series of, you know, man-made canals back there that sometimes lead into little ponds. Basically, they're trying to make as much waterfront access for the lovely residents of Lake Conroe as possible. and as a result make these flats with ponds and ditches and man-made ditches and stuff. So the majority of the guys, except for some of the guys that were up north in the jungle and there's some canal systems up there, the majority of the guys were packed into these backwater areas.
Yeah.
You know, you could actually drive around the lake and see where the bridges are. And I actually watched them. You know, you could find Sprague, you could find Ducky, you could find Jordan Lee on the final day. And, you know, the lake would be on your right-hand side and the backwater with the ditch would be on your left-hand side. And there would just be wrapped boats and anglers with cameras and all sorts of stuff in every single one that you passed. So,
yeah. All right, well, here's what happened in the final 10 minutes yesterday on Lake Conroe.
That's a big one.
This might be the one.
Lee, stay on there, fish. Stay on there, baby.
Wow.
That's a game winner right there. It's over.
Wow.
Of all things to get that bite on, it's on a drop shot. I've been going down through here, flipping and everything else. That is the tournament right there, boys. Stay on there, girl. Stay on there, girl. Golly, that's a big one. That is a big one. Come on, baby. Open that mouth up. Get up here. Woo-hoo! Looky there. Yes. There's your bug-eyed big one right there on a dadgum drop shot. Holy smokes.
It's a $100,000 fish. Drop yes. shot.
You say, amen, $100,000. Golly, son. Let's weigh this puppy. Oh.
£8, 1 ounce.
Oh, my God. Look at that big old fat girl. She's coming in here to spawn. Golly, that's a good one. Thank you. I don't want to let her go. I'm just so happy. I'm so happy. Get right here. Let's watch her swim off. Man, all day long I've been looking for you, and you make me wait to the last 10 minutes. Thank you, girl. Golly.
All right, Matthew, there you have it. And that definitely shut the door on everybody else. Drop shot.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look back at Edwin's history on Lake Conroe with some of his TTBC success and then lack of success in the final round. Remember what happened in that Bassmaster Classic 2 years ago that Jordan Lee won. Edwin was on the that spinnerbait bite along the bulkheads and break walls, was catching him on that shad deal super early in the morning. Jordan had that big comeback. Edwin got hung up on that giant bedfish back in the marina. His spinnerbait fish didn't fire. I think he only came in with two fish on the final day. And went into that final day with the chance to lead it. So he said it definitely crossed his mind. He said Conroe owed him one when I talked to him yesterday after the win.
All right, and we'll get into more of the details with him on Wednesday. And then we'll also talk about some of the stuff that you experienced over the weekend at Lake Conroe. So very impressive show, what they put on there. A lot of stuff, a lot of things going on, and we're going to get into that on Wednesday. All right, I told you I was going to put together some stuff, and I'm not done with this, but I'll just tease it a little bit here, Matthew. Two events in the books, and I'm actually going to keep...
For what tour?
For the BPT.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to keep some records here. Two events in. Heaviest winning weight final round. Who has that? Obviously, two events.
It would be Edwin, right?
No, it's Jordan Lee.
What did he have?
55.01.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
All right. Then Edwin has 51. Here's the deal. Jordan, his average weight, 2.02. Edwin, 2.03.
And that's with a 9-pounder?
Yeah.
With the 8-pounder at the end?
Yeah. Jordan had 26 fish. Edwin had 24 fish. This is just the final round.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Most fish caught in a final round.
Hello?
Any idea?
No, didn't Edwin have
Edwin had 28 at Garcia.
Oh.
Remember, the final day was on Garcia. And then Jordan and Edwin each had 26. Jordan had 26 at Garcia. Edwin had 26 at Conroe. So he's on that list twice. Heaviest fish in the final round. You just saw it. 8.01. Lowest weight in a final round.
Like who sucked the bet most?
It was the lowest weight.
Total?
Yeah.
Had to have been the this time.
Yeah. Stephen Browning, four fish. Average weight. Well, it was 6.02. Average weight, 1.08. Now to the shotgun round. Heaviest round leading after the shotgun round.
Just go ahead and, I mean, it's a...
56 pounds, Marty Robinson. Then Randy Howell, 49 pounds, 12 ounces. Marty Robinson also has the most fish caught during a shotgun round, 34.
So...
average weight, 1.10. There's, so there's a theme here.
Well, that's pretty impressive. So they fish for what I was doing here is with the phone was they fish for like 7.5 hours, right? So they have two and a half break, 2.5 break, 2.5. So with that number, Marty Robinson is catching over 4.5 bass per hour.
Yeah.
Which would mean that over the course of his entire day, he is averaging a 1 pound bass every 15 minutes.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, when you think about
catching a fish, yeah, but I mean, it's 1 pound.
I'm just saying, I go a lot of times without without catching a...
Okay. Anyway.
That's every 15 minutes to get that.
Here's an interesting stat. Shotgun round, highest average weight, two fish minimum. Any idea what the highest average weight in a shotgun round has been?
Was it Jason Christie?
No, Randall Tharp.
Oh, at Florida the first
3.06. Yep. He had six fish. Randall Tharp also had 3.03 at Toho for nine fish. So Randall Tharp leading the way with the season average per fish so far this year. Elimination round, heaviest weight, which happened to be the heaviest weight so far ever caught in any round. Remember who?
No.
Anthony Gagliardi, 7108, 40 fish, averaged 1.13. All right, elimination round, highest cut weight, right at the cut line, 20th place, Dean Rojas, 3606, 14 fish, 2.04 for his average weight at Conroe. And then a couple more real quick here. Lowest average weight to make the cut for the top 40. Fletcher Shryock, 50 pounds, 4 ounces, 33 fish. Average weight, 1.08. Highest average weight to make a top 40 cut. That was Zach Burge at Toho. And it was 2.16.
I'm dealing with a pretty small sample size here, though. It's two.
Well, I mean, that's all I got, though.
No, I hear you.
That's all we have. We have two events. Highest total weight in the elimination round, that would be Dustin Connell, 49.10. Average 3.09, but he also had a 9-pounder. And then the lowest weight to make a cut, Stephen Browning, Lake Conroe, 25.13. Average weight, 2.14. So you have one guy out of the 80 guys that is averaging over 3 pounds per catch.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of that gives you a really good indication of, let's be honest, Matthew, these guys, especially this time of the year, I mean, it's a buck bass contest. Agreed?
The buck bass battle is what I nicknamed this tournament. And when a female showed up, ho, bonus.
Bonus. Now, we'll get into this a little bit more on Wednesday, but I got a very, very passionate email from Derek Anderson, okay, one of our viewers. And he pointed out something that I'd thought about. And he wants me to ask Boyd Duckett a question when we get him on. And we're going to try and get him on next week if he has time on his schedule. But and I had thought about this. Do you think... Or let me just say this. I think there should be a severe penalty, and Derek thinks the same thing, if you hook a fish and the fish is bleeding. You get the fish into the boat. You let the fish take it too long. The fish is bleeding. The likelihood that that fish will remain alive, I mean, who knows? You don't know. It could live. It could prosper. It could go and make babies, all that stuff and everything. But the likelihood that that fish has been damaged because of the blood, probably need to be a penalty in there. What do you think about that, Matthew?
Okay, off the top, I have had extensive conversations about this, too, with certain individuals.
If the fish is bleeding, listen, there should be a penalty.
First of all, you don't want to draw attention to the fact that the fish is bleeding. And if you've got a guy sitting in the penalty box, people are going to know why he's sitting in the penalty box, which means everybody's going to know that fish is bleeding. So I'm just listen. Just
okay.
Listen. Hear
okay.
me out.
Okay.
Second, I do think it is an issue because I have heard, with my own ears, an angler who will be remain unnamed because I don't have any ill will against him. He's trying to do the best out there.
Right.
Who said, hell, I don't have to worry about keeping the fish alive. It wasn't Duckett, by the way.
Yeah.
I know he was letting him swim with it, but it was not Duckett who said this. I don't have to worry about keeping them alive, so I let those suckers choke on it, and I just cut the hook and throw them back because it doesn't matter that I got to keep them alive anymore. So at this tournament where those buck bass were taking it off the bed, he said he was feeding them line and letting them swallow it and then reeling it in and cutting the hook and retying.
Yeah.
That doesn't happen in a five fish tournament because you got to keep them alive.
Right. Right.
I mean, I can't tell you how many times have you seen, I've watched four times so far, just the stuff that I've watched an angler cut the hook or have a gut hooked bass. I can't think of a single time in watching bass live where I had a gut hook Texas rigged fish. Can you? I mean, you know what it really threw it back to? It threw it back to Harold Hampton in the Assumption Bass Club in the late 90s, who threw a black red glitter Producto paddle tail worm on a true turn hook with a lead, a 6'6 pistol grip, and every time he got a bite, the first thing you do is push the button.
That's pretty good, Matthew. That's really good. So I don't know. I tend to sway my opinion that there should be a penalty. If you catch a fish and that fish is gut hooked or gill hooked and it's bleeding, you know what? You sit there 5 minutes. 5 minutes.
There's also a lot of stuff that happens that you can't control.
Like
and
what?
And you're letting that fish go and the chances are that fish heals. I mean, look, you just bled a lot and you're not dead.
I'm not a fish.
I'm just saying, based on your chin.
I did bleed a lot.
Based
man.
On your chin, you probably bled more than any fish that was caught and hooked this week in MLF.
I did bleed a lot, man. Never try and multitask when you're shaving. You know, I was trying to watch the Oklahoma State-Texas game. I was trying to watch bass and Major League Fishing on the phone.
Oh, we'll get into it on Wednesday because it is very impressive to attend it. And like having attended every Elite Series tournament up until this year for the past 10, 11 years and been to the FLW and been to the TTBC and all this stuff, the impressive factor was off the charts. So I'm looking forward to talking about it in 2 days.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about the guy who is a spotted bass master now.
Yeah. All right. Going to take a break, come back with Paul Mueller, talk about his Lake Lanier victory. Everybody stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with Live Sight Sonar. HDS Live. New from Lowrance.
The Heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast-off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
Some people have seen a green ghost. Green Ghost, the new rod from Duckett Fishing. $79. It's coming February 2019. Duckett Fishing, pro driven.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
Pros depend on hydraulic jack plates to get the best out of their boats. Do what they do. Demand Atlas Performance. Atlas gets you from the bottom to the top in less than 8 seconds, even with the big four strokes. And when you gotta turn right around and get that heavy load back up in rough water, Atlas's innovative design and American-made components will get you there with confidence.
I'm at Depot. Just look for yourself. There's an Atlas jack plate on just about every professional's boat.
The Atlas Hydraulic Jack Plate. You can depend on it.
The message is simple. Win. Coming in 2019, the Duckett Fishing Silverado. It's coming at you for $99.95. Check it out at DuckettFishing.com. There is no gray area, just silver. Check it out.
Hey guys, Aaron Martins here. I'm gonna be telling you about a new product by Sunline. It's Siglon PE times 8. I've been using it almost extensively all year for my frogging, flipping, drop shotting, shaky heading, worming, jerk baiting. It's by far my favorite Sunline braid. I don't say this unless I think it's true, but honestly, it's the best braid in the market of any of the braids. Definitely check it out. It's a price point line, $14.95 for 165 yards, and that could last you a whole year, just one spool with using leader material. So again, it's Siglon PE times 8. It's my favorite braid, and I think if you use it, it'll be your favorite braid too.
Avco has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know, how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's gonna stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's gonna keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from Avco.
Wins the league series and now he hi-hats us.
All right, we are back on a Monday, kicking off the week. Mark and Matt in studio. We are having some difficulties getting a hold of Paul. I know he said the cell service was kind of sketchy and they had no internet where he was staying at, so we'll keep trying. In the meantime, I've got a video I want to queue up. And it was really kind of the turning point for him during the day on a miserable weather day.
Did not look fun in Georgia.
It looked really, really, really bad with all the rain and even the weigh-in. They had a ton of people still show up, Matthew. I mean, it was raining cats and dogs and was miserable, but they still had a number of fans show up for the festivities. Mm-hmm. But I really think that this was the turning point of the day for Paul's win, and I'm going to get this queued up.
Final here. Day.
Yeah.
Chris Saldane entered the day with about a pound lead. The two had bounced around the top five for the duration of the tournament, and Mullins was in the mix. But these two were kind of doing something similar while a lot of the other guys were cranking and jerk baiting.
Yeah.
And then this happened.
All right, here we go.
That's the kind we need right there. That's the biggest fish I caught all week.
Man, that thing was huge. Huge.
For the iTunes listeners, that was a very wet and cold Paul Mueller in a rain suit, skillfully fighting a 5.25-pound spotted bass on spinning gear that probably fell prey to, was it the rain's bubble?
Yeah.
The bubble shot on the do it. The guy caught him on what he says he fishes all the time. He pours the Do It molds and he fishes the Rains plastics, and yeah, that's how he got it done. So
yeah, Mercer coined the term spotopotamus.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like that.
Yeah, you remember Hallman was the one who coined, when the FLW tour was there last year, fence pandas.
Yeah,
because of the coloration of the fish, how fat they were with the white bellies on them, and then they were along those break walls.
Yeah.
Which didn't really play a lot this week. I saw Ray Hanselman doing it a little bit in the. I mean, I'll be honest. I was more keyed into the Bass Pro Tour that was going on because that's what I was there covering.
Yeah,
that's what I was in. Dave was actually at Lanier, but from the coverage I saw and the guys that I talked to about it, that did not play nearly as much as it did when the FLW Tour was there.
All right, we're gonna keep trying to make contact with Paul. And if for some reason we're not able to get him on, we will do whatever we can to get him mm-hmm. on the show at a later date. But we will continue to work feverishly to try and make contact with him. In the meantime, let's kind of get into some of the stuff that you saw this past weekend at your first MLF event, BPT event, at Lake Conroe. And I know one of the things is we're going to have a special guest as a result of some of the conversations that you had here on the show.
Absolutely. We're going to get the head of officials on who's going to come in and kind of talk about. I know we have had a lot of questions sent in by viewers mm-hmm. about why certain officials act the way that they do or what they do and the rules and how they're actually done. And I was actually approached to say, hey, I want to come on and talk about how we choose them, why they act the way that they do. You know, you have some people that are like, oh, he's too nice to his pro, and other people who go, oh, that marshal's a dick. That referee is a jackass because he's not nice enough.
Yeah.
So they're going to come on and talk about the selection. I mean, it's not just throw a jersey on some guys and tell them to weigh people's fish and not give them a penalty. There's a very strict selection. There's actually like a seniority, a hierarchy of the guys who have been doing it the longest that get to be an official in the later rounds, in the TV rounds. It's a pretty cool process. And then just to see those guys, I mean, I watched a lot of the footage. I was there and I thought the officials did a great job of being part of the action without becoming the action.
All right.
So that's coming up in the
You know
next
what else is
weeks.
The bottom line? Their word is final.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, and I'll say this. There was a situation that occurred, and I actually called the media coordinator, mm-hmm. Rory, for Major League Fishing, and he hooked me up with a tournament official, and tournament official called me back and gave me the entire explanation of a particular situation that took place on whether or not the fish was in the boat after a certain time or before a certain time, before the, you know, the horn went off or whatever. And he explained to me this situation. He also said that there has been discussion about utilizing instant replay. I was like, you know, hey, when's it going to get to the point where you're kind of like the NBA and go to Secaucus? And he just chuckled and he's like, no, no, no. He said, that's been discussed, but as of today, they will not be going to any instant replay. They're not going to go to Secaucus.
That would be a cool moment, replay, though. Could you imagine Chad McKee going, This catch is in the instant replay, Chuck. Right now, let's replay it back, and you can see right there.
Yeah,
the clock is at zero. What do you think, Marty? And Marty sitting over there. Well, I think the head of the fish was above the gunwale. It'll be just replayed it back and forth. It'd be like, yeah, we have a decision coming, yeah, out of the truck, and that is. That is not a legal bass. And then JT Kenny loses his mind. And
the anglers, they get one appeal per tournament. They've got one red flag that they could use to where if they want to dispute a call by the official, they throw the red flag out on the deck of the boat. All right, we're going to go to Secaucus. And for those people that don't know what Secaucus is, that is a place in New Jersey of which the NBA has their master control for all of the video replay appeals by the referees across the nation. So it's a cool name, too.
There you go.
Secaucus.
So we'll have...
So no instant replay as of this time. Mm-hmm. But yes, you know, is there a possibility? I guess there's a possibility for anything, but... He said it has been discussed, but at this time, no instant replay. All right, what else? What else could you add from your trip down there?
So I roll in not really knowing what to expect. Get in there Friday. I have obviously heard about this. And I got to be honest, Mark, this is the second Bass Pro Tour event. It's surreal to see it in person from the concept that it was just months ago, and you roll in and I actually ran into Mike Malone, who does the scheduling for MLF. He did the scheduling for Bass before.
Right. Right.
This time last year was right. With Bass. But I said, hey, he actually offered to show me around. I said, absolutely. So I text him the next day and stuff, and I get in. He gives me the grand tour, which is... It's impressive as hell, Mark.
Oh, I believe it.
You cannot,
it's big time,
you
man.
Cannot describe. So
it's like a rock concert.
They have this stage. They have over 110, 120, between 110 and 120 people on staff, like on staff right there with Major League Fishing. So you're at a more than a 1-to-1 ratio of MLF staff, people who are there working for MLF. You know, working on the stage, freelancing, the talent behind the scenes, all that, the digital, the production. There's more like one staff per angler. Bass at their height operated like 45 to 50 is what I was told. So you've got fewer anglers, you've got more people. There's people everywhere with cameras, and they're all MLF people.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of freelancers, a lot. The production truck, which is Wintercom, which does a lot of things that are, you know, related to the outdoors, unrelated to the outdoors. This is kind of their jam, right? That's doing it. So you walk into this production truck. It's got hundreds of cables coming out. You know, it's dark in there, and there are 12 people in this production truck that all have that have headsets on. And you walk into the screen, and I counted. It's like 44, 45 different screens. and you've got, you know, it's dark in there, and they've got all the different anglers that are up on the screens. You've got one guy that's talking to, like, JT and Chad and up on the front, you know, up on the stage. And then there's a dude who's just doing graphics, and then there's a guy who's calling it, and he's like, we got screen 10 queued, screen 10 queued, go to screen 10, fish catch, watch screen 13, blah, blah, blah. So I was in there the day that Keith Poche just absolutely was trying to catch one in the last 15 minutes. So these guys are in there, and they're trying to build this story as it is happening live with guys, and it's amazing to see seven different people working in coordination and throwing it to the front to get this to look so seamless to us, the viewer.
Yeah.
And they're sitting in there and they're going, now watch it. He's amped up. He's amped up. Watch the curse words on that. He might drop something because he's so keyed up. Because, you know, yeah. Keith pushes. Ah. And then they're like, come on, come on, come on, catch one. Make this interesting. And then they're like, hey, so-and-so's hooked up. Let's cut to him and cut to him. And it's just back and forth. So all that's going on. And these guys are like really into it. And it's impressive to see how smooth and seamless it is this soon into the product.
Yeah.
You know, 12 days into the product now. So that's cool. The other thing is you walk out and the set is intentionally massive. It is a rock concert stage set. And I was talking to them. They actually got it from people who do rock concert stages. I mean, that's what they do. They bring them in and they do it. And, you know, you watch and you see the breaks and there's people up there putting makeup on JT Kenny's face. And behind it, there's a trailer that is just for the talent, where the talent can rest and get ready. So you're talking about next level stuff here. They had three rooms in it, you know, a bunch of barriers also. From an impressive factor, from a professional, like if you walked up and didn't know anything and walked up to a Bass event in the past, I feel you'd be like, okay, this is cool. This is badass. There's a production truck. There's a studio in this. You walk up to the Major League Fishing and you go, oh, wow. Like, I'd never seen anything like it.
It's like a rock concert.
It's definitely like a rock concert with nobody there.
That production truck is very similar to the type of production truck that's used to do games, where you have, I mean, you may have 16 cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So you got the guy in there, you know, looking at the different shots, telling people what, you know, what camera, what shot to go to, doing exactly what you described, giving information on the earphone to the guys that are on the set. So there's a lot of pieces to the puzzle that makes that thing work.
And then, of course, they have the backup generator there in case everything goes down in that whole truck and system. But on the water, what I didn't realize is it is a circus to get these guys to fish. Now, you've got a guy who's dialed into it. He knows he's going to have a camera with him. At this point in the game, he understands that the camera is a necessity, right? Like, that's part of the game at this point. But you've got an official in the boat. You've got the guy fishing. Then you've got an official in the boat. Then you've got a camera man in the boat as well. Then you have a follow boat, especially on the final day.
Yeah.
And there is those that's an MLF boat. I think they have eight of them.
Yeah.
Then there's another camera in that's getting a different angle and another driver on that. So you're dealing with two boats, two cameras, one, two, three, four, five, six people to watch the guy catch a fish. And I passed one backwater area and there were two of these setups in there.
Yeah.
So you're talking about four MLF boats, four cameras, two officials, four chase people. So it was the production, for as smooth as it is after 12 days, the production value is off the charts impressive.
I agree. And they're spending a lot of money too, Matthew. I mean, that stuff's not cheap.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about that. And how they are showcasing the guys and the way that they are showcasing the guys, they're doing a great job. They really are. I mean, obviously it's different. It's change. It is a totally different vibe how they are accomplishing what the whole aspect of catching fish.
So I ask guys, I spent a lot of time talking to anglers, because I've known them over the past 10, 11 years on the Elite Series. I said, does it feel like you're fishing a tournament Does it feel like you're fishing a TV event? Does it feel like you're fishing something that's where the drama is manufactured? And we're actually going to run some of this stuff. I got some stuff with Stephen Browning, who caught a fish in the last second to make the top 10. A really cool interview on that. And it's interesting because I'm getting split, Mark. I'm getting some that say it doesn't really feel like a tournament. It feels like I'm scrambling around and I don't really know what's going on. And you have these crazy periods. And before you know it, the day's over. And it's like, what just happened? I've talked to other guys who say, yeah, man, it's just like fishing a regular day. You get settled in, you kind of get in your pattern, you get in your groove, and I really feel like I'm able to kind of fish and expand. And then you have other guys, I have a story coming out with Justin Lucas in the next couple of weeks who just barely missed the cut, finishing 21st in this one and had a bad tournament in Florida, who says, there is a formula to how you practice, to how you fish this major league fishing, as far as running, as far as what type of areas you're looking for, as far as finding locations that are close to each other, because every time you run now, you are losing ground when by the time you set down, you can start farther away now because you have a half hour of run time. So if you're going to start somewhere that would be 45 minutes away that you would lose fishing time, now you're only losing 15 minutes of fishing time, and then you don't have lines out until the end of the competition, so it actually opens up more water on that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of different things at play, and a lot of guys who are fishing it and viewing it differently as they kind of figure out and navigate the way through the BPT.
On the instant feedback, several people have asked, do you know if the officials get paid? And I'm not sure. I think they do get paid. We will ask that question when we have the director of officials, or whatever his title is. Yeah. What's his title?
I think it's that.
Director of officiating or officials.
Yeah.
We will have him hopefully in studio, and we will dive into that question when he's here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to try and get that set up for next week.
Okay.
All right. And then also we're going to try and have Boyd on the following week also. What else, man? What else caught your attention while you were down there?
The focus has been on the crowds, and they are they're pretty adamant that they're not focused, especially this year, on the number of people that attend the Bass Pro Tour events. They did not activate down at Conroe, which is the midway with the boats,
right,
and then the shops. And I would say that on the last 3 days, there were anywhere from 75 to 300 people there.
Just kind of milling around.
Milling around, watching, a lot of people wanting to get their autographs like that. But, I mean, not a large crowd at all, but they weren't trying to get the crowds. I don't know.
That's not part of their objective.
Yeah, which is odd to be at this event and not have the crowd element there.
Yeah.
Now I get it in the grand scheme of things.
Do you think the drive-through was too long?
They shortened it up a little bit.
Oh, I know.
They shortened it up a lot.
Yeah, they went to the first 25, mm-hmm. and then if you want to, you can.
Yeah. In the grand scheme of things, how important do you feel like a crowd at the post-game show / weigh-in really is, Mark, when you know that this is going to air on TV, and that with the live viewers online, that it is a fraction, a very small percentage of the actual people that you're reaching are on location? How important is it that there are people there that are
for that model, for their model,
just in tournament fishing model?
And when they're not bringing anything to the stage except their body, truck, and boat, where's the whiff them? And I talk about the Wiffle all the time.
What's in it for me?
What's in it for me, the fan?
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe I might be able to meet Mike Iaconelli, or I might be able to meet Kevin Van Dam. Maybe, but I think with this model, the star of the show is what takes place on the water.
I agree.
That is the star of the show in this model.
Mm-hmm.
I think with Bass, you have two stars. You have what takes place on the water, but the star for that model becomes the fish that are being weighed in.
I agree.
And that's why the people show up. You know, there were several comments made that Dave talked to me about, that some of the fans that were in the crowd at Lanier, they didn't even know who the guys were, but they were so excited about how big and fat that those spotted bass were. Man, did you see that one right there? Did you see how, how big the gut was on that one? That's what they want to see. So you have two different things taking place with two different entities, two different styles, two different paths, two different business models. And right now, according to the numbers, I guess they're both working.
The other thing that I noticed that was very apparent was you get towards the end of an FLW tour event, and I'm going to preface this with saying I don't know whether this is good or bad. You get towards the end of an FLW or Elite Series tour event, and you're talking to the guys. Now, yeah, they're going to put on their face on stage and act excited and that they're pumped, but the average week you get to the end, they've had 2.5 or 3 full days of practice, depending on FLW Tour Elite Series, and then 4 grueling tournament days where you're on the water an hour before dawn. It's just go, 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 go. And then you come back, you weigh in, and you repeat it. So you're talking 7 straight days. Well, here at MLF, you get the basically a day and a half of practice. Then you either fish a day and get a day off, fish a day, get a day off, or get a day off, fish a day, get a day off, fish a day, and then fish 2 days on the final day. But you don't have to get there 2-3 hours before launch in the morning because there's only maximum going to be 40 or either 40 or 10 boats that you're fishing against.
Yeah.
There's no blast off or launch. So you just you take out at, 7:30 and then the line's in at 8. And then when you're done, there's no stress on you. I know a lot of guys stress the running in, the getting your fish to the scales, to getting them checked in. Like, there is a lot of stress there, Mark, that people don't get to see. Waiting for a bag, all that. It's just you kind of come back, you mosey in, they got food for you. You've got an hour of literally nothing to do while you get your tackle ready for the next day or just sit there if you didn't make the cut before you go to the post-game show. And then it wraps up at 6:30 and you're good to go. So the stress level and the freshness of these guys, now granted it's the beginning of the season too, but they weren't beat down. They didn't seem worn out. It didn't seem like they'd been through a marathon.
Yeah.
They didn't seem tired. Now you can go the opposite way and say, if you're fishing for $100,000 in the hardware, you should be exhausted. It should be a grind, and you should be stressed out during that whole thing. But there's a lot of stress that takes place on the water at the BPT, but the way that it is surrounded and the way that the format works, it is I don't think that it is as much of a physical grind as a 5-fish FLW Tour Elite Series.
All right, now, can you give me your interpretation of this rule that you're allowed to get out of the boat, but you get like a 5-minute penalty?
A 3-minute penalty, from what I understand. You can leave the boat to land a fish, but you will be assessed a 3-minute penalty.
All right, and several guys.
Iaconelli did it.
One of the other guys
flipped over a dock and had to get out and get it. Yeah.
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 I whatever.
It's cool. It's a wrinkle.
Yeah.
I think there's also a rule that like once a period or once a day you can fish with 2 rods.
What?
Like, let's say you have a tree that you know there's a fish on, you chuck your square bill up and just stick it right in the trunk or something.
Yeah.
You can pick another rod up and flip in there like once a day if you're convinced there's a fish in there or something.
Let me ask you this. I've been thinking about this whole dropped weight situation. All right.
Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you what your opinion is on this. Let's say after the shotgun round and then the elimination round, which is the qualifying round to get into the top 20 for both squads A and B.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So then you have 2 days remaining, correct? You have 40 anglers.
Right.
Then they cut to the top 10.
Right.
What would you think about modifying it to where once you get down to 40 anglers, you maintain the weight that you have during that, whatever it's called. I don't know what it's called.
The elimination round to the championship round or whatever.
Yeah, when they have 40 anglers remaining, okay, starting that day. Mm-hmm.
Because now everyone's on the same body of water at the same time, and now it actually matters.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Mark.
I like that a lot.
I can't remember what I actually have and haven't said on air. I don't know if I've come out and said it. I am not a fan of the zeroing of the weights at all. I understand why they have to do it, especially in the first 2 rounds, because you have guys fishing on Tuesday, Thursday, Wednesday, Friday, and that would be like having golf tournaments taking place at the same time on two different courses, and you can't do it. There is no option other than to zero those weights heading into the 40. Now, I don't mind it when they're doing what they're doing up in North Carolina coming up, which is three different lakes. So you have your opening rounds, you qualify on those rounds, then you go to a different lake for the third round, and then the final round is on a different lake. That's fine. Zero those weights. You want to do that, that's good to go. That's going to be very exciting to watch. I like that. I liked the Lake Garcia on the final day.
I got you. I agree.
But when it's all on the same lake like this, Jeff Sprague finishes second. He should have been, it should have affected him in the third round that he lost two giants, broke them off, lost a couple fish.
Yeah.
Like, that had no bearing. So it's like this massively important thing at the time that you don't get penalized for. Or you catch 15, 20 pounds more than the next guy, but you're tied with the guy who caught seven fish and struggled all day. Like, that to me doesn't give you the true champion. It gives you the champion of the day.
Yeah.
I don't like that. I never will like the zeroing of the weights. Yeah. I feel like I got screwed out of a college national championship because of the zeroing of the weights on the Arkansas River back in the day. I'm still pissed about it, Mark.
You know, some of the people on the instant feedback, they like it, they don't like it. Maynard says, how many times does the same fish get caught? And guys on camera over the weekend actually admitted, oh, I caught that one.
So I talked about this, and I had a conversation with someone in the know about this. Is there a waterproof, harmless dye pen to where with each fish catch,
you mark it?
The marshal can put a dot on the fish's tail. It is not invasive. It fades away after a month. It is waterproof. It stays on there. So as the tournament progresses, you can tell how many times a fish gets caught.
Kind of like a highlighter or something.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just boom, put a little mark on it. A little waterproof mark that will eventually wear off as that fish grows. I think that does two things. It creates more storylines because Chad can be up there going, folks, at the end of this one, that 2-pound, 4-ouncer, equated for four anglers caught it for 11.5 pounds of total weight. And then here's what it does after the venue's over. After it's over, now you have fans that want to go there and try to catch a major league fishing caught bass.
Yeah.
Think about how cool that would be.
Yeah.
Now you can have someone go back into Edwin's area and go, dude, I caught one of Edwin's fish today. How cool is that?
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a good idea. I like it. Huh.
And it's super easy. It would take zero time. There's zero controversy
It's
100% eco-friendly.
Is that available?
I don't know. I mean, hell, we put a guy on the moon in the 70s or 60s. I'm sure we could find a way to put a blue dot on a fish's tail that lasts a month.
All right, here's the second thing that we're going to do. And once again, we apologize for the connectivity issues with Paul Mueller. We will do everything that we can to try and get him on the show. Maybe try and slide him in tomorrow with Brad in studio. Two guys can talk spotted bass. That would be a good call because he won. Yeah, so we'll see. We'll see if we can pull that off. In the meantime, last Friday's show was not on iTunes. It was not on the replay because we had some gremlins in the studio. We got that all worked out, obviously, with how we're rolling today. But there were a couple of things that we talked about on that show that I want to bring up. Once again, before I do that, we do not have time to do that today. I'm going to do it tomorrow and Wednesday. But what I do want to do is I would like somebody to call the Sunline hotline. Just one call right now and make sure that we have everything dialed in, because on Wednesday, we're going to try and do the Sunline hotline after we have Edwin on Wednesday. Take some phone calls. So the number is right under where you see the video. If you're watching on YouTube, it's not posted there. I don't remember what the number is. Can you look it up?
405-253-5543.
One more time, Matthew.
405-253-5543.
All right. So if we could get a volunteer to call us on the Sunline hotline, make sure we have everything dialed in. Dude, you should have seen me and the engineer in this place on Friday. It was
good comments.
It was quite comical trying to get it all figured out. He's the man, though. Had it figured out in like 5 minutes.
Cool.
Myself, I cannot figure it out. All right, here, we got a call coming in. Let's see here. Hey, who is this?
Hey, this is Christian, founder of Yellow Tech.
Oh, what's going on, Christian? How are you?
Not much. We're the powered GoPro mount guys.
Yeah, you're the, I'll tell you what, the unfortunate Action Jackson where he put his RV in the water there was captured on a Yellow Tech. Yeah. I believe that might be some of the finest footage.
That was actually me. You see me running across and I'm the guy holding on to the mirror to stop it from floating away.
If that was not a testament to Yellow Tech, I don't know what would be.
You know, it was so funny because, you know, FLW came up with Rule 12 this year, which is every boat has to have a POV camera on board. And Chuck Stratton, first time he ever put a power stick in his boat, first time he ever had a GoPro, first time he was ever recording, and that's what he captures.
If you're not familiar with what we're talking about, I think it was Eric Jackson, right?
Yeah.
His Eric Jackson kayak.
His dog put his camper in reverse while he was back at his boat in at the first event of the year, and it floated it like he sunk it. It was pretty interesting.
It was incredible. He actually Eric later. I had met Eric like 4 years ago at a classic, but I hadn't talked to him for a long time, and so he actually got out of his RV. He had put a large battery or something on his brake as an extra safety precaution, but that kind of RV has a push button, apparently, push a reverse, push a drive. And his 2-year-old beautiful Dalmatian Bodhi jumped up into the driver's seat. And you can see it. If you look at the video at 53 seconds, you can zoom in and you can see his dog in his chair and he hits the reverse button and it comes in the water.
Awesome. So what's up?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. It's working, Mark.
Yeah, it seems like it. What are your thoughts about two major events taking place during the same week and weekend?
It was tough. I'll tell you what, Team Yellow Tech's getting no work done.
So how did you split up your time?
Phones, iPads, computers. I mean, you could just walk through and hear, you know, whether the other week it was FLW and BASS going at the same time. Now it's Major League Fishing and BASS. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
I'm waiting for the all 3 week. That's going to be nuts. It's going to happen twice.
We're just going to shut down.
All right, man. Well, anything else that you'd like to add since you're on the line?
No, I just love you guys' show. Watch it all the time. Luckily, with you guys, we can watch it later if we're busy like we normally are. But I appreciate you guys.
All right, awesome. Man. Thanks for calling.
You bet.
All right, see you. All right. We got it dialed in, Matthew.
Fill me a chew with the savage comment. I don't want to catch a 1-pound bass even if Edwin had caught it the day before.
Well,
I'm just saying, I think it'd be a cool touch that would be easy to do.
Yeah.
Two tournaments in, Mark, they're shockingly dialed in.
Well, they're still having issues with the stream.
I'm just saying, have it been there and seen it, it's
from a logistics standpoint
remarkably
yeah.
smooth for two tournaments into a brand new venture.
Dude, I am not doubting the logistical structure and how they have everything set up. But there's still some frustrated fans out there because the stream keeps messing up. Bottom line, they've had two events. Now, will they have the thing corrected by the time that they get to Raleigh? Hopefully. But the bottom line is people are still having issues.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's it. You're two events into it. You got $1 million worth of streaming equipment out there, and you're still having issues.
I guess we can close it on this. And I had a long discussion with several people about this last night, like an hour plus discussion on the way home with some professional anglers on both sides of the fence here. I think this is turning into an education versus entertainment battle.
That's a great point because I did watch Chris Zaldane give a clinic during his live segment on what he was doing, how he was doing it, you know. Very, very detailed, very professional, very good for the fan from an education standpoint. Then you have the other side where you are being educated, but in a totally different way, while the premise is entertainment.
Hook sets and drama on the MLF side. You know, if it cuts to a guy, admit he's about to jack one. On the Bass side, they do the same thing. They have it in the queue.
Yeah.
But they stay with the guy more, and there's more education in it. It is more tailored towards the fan that is trying to learn for their own benefit than MLF, which has stated that they are trying to reach out to the fan who is not familiar with it, but to catch their attention.
Right.
Do you really care what the settings on your graph are if you're a casual fan who doesn't even have a boat? No. Do you care when you see Andy Montgomery try to boat flip the biggest thing you've ever seen in your life? It looks like a whale. It's a 9-pounder at the side of the boat, and he's in there going, oh, my God, oh, my God. Yes, that's going to be a lot more exciting to you than Chris Saldane's settings when he's drop-shotting in 40 foot of water. But for the fan, I kind of like to see Chris a little bit. I kind of like to learn from that because that's kind of my neck of the woods, too. I like dropping on him.
Yeah.
Do I learn more watching Bass Live than I do watching MLF Live? Yes. Do I think it's designed to be that way? Yes. Do I think they will become more polarizing as the year continues with Bassmaster going towards more information, more teaching, more in-depth? Yes. Yeah. Do I think MLF will get farther and farther away from that core fan to try to do something to capture the casual fan or the people who don't watch fishing? Yes.
No, all valid points, man. Very, very valid points. So I'm right there with you.
Now take that a step further, and as a professional angler then, you have to sit there and think, what is more valuable for me and my sponsors? Being on for longer times and reaching a hardcore audience where they can actually understand why I'm using the bait that I'm using, to where they go to Tackle Warehouse or even Bass Pro and order it because of what they saw? Or is it more valuable to my sponsors that there's name recognition and an entertainment value to where you really like watching this guy set the hook, but may not know what he's using or why he's using it?
What's going to move the needle? What's going to benefit the sponsors
the most?
That's
what I'm saying. And these guys don't know. They don't know because it's never been like that. There's never been.
Are they betting on the come? What might develop?
I would say yes. That is 100% what they're doing.
Yeah, I think so. And I'm sure we're going to see an educational aspect of Major League Fishing. And I'm not saying that some of the stuff that they're doing on the water is not educational. I mean, I'm sure people are picking up little tidbits. In fact, I've got an email right here that somebody noticed that I wanted to get to real quick. And I know we're kind of going long, but Donald Husted sent an email to me. It said, I saw the first piece of innovation this weekend, specifically for Major League Fishing. Edwin Evers put an extra power pole foot switch on the rod box toward the passenger seat. This made it quicker for him to anchor and weigh the fish.
Do you know why I did that? Because you cannot put your power poles down or anything if you get a penalty.
Right.
So what these guys are doing, what you're seeing them doing in Major League Fishing now, is as soon as they boat a bass or while they're fighting a bass, they will now power pole down. So if that fish hits on the carpet, they are already power pole down. So their penalty then is in a stationary location.
Yeah. By the way, folks, please keep the feedback and the questions coming in. We have a number of people that are unable to watch the live show, that listen to the show on iTunes or watch the replay, that are unable to ask questions on the instant feedback. So what they've been doing, Matthew, is sending me in questions when we have guests. So greatly appreciate all the feedback from the people that are watching and listening. Mm-hmm. All right. All right. We tried, like I said, Dave, our man Dave Rush, was at Lake Lanier.
I'm blaming Dave.
He made contact with Paul. I spoke to Paul last night. We had it set up, so we will try and get him on tomorrow, if possible, with Brad Hallman here
in
studio.
He's probably in some basement pouring do-it molds.
You're all about that, aren't you? You like bringing that up, don't you?
It's cool. Well, I mean, heck, if you follow him on social media.
Yeah.
He makes you a believer. You watch a couple of those videos and you're like, dude, I need some Do-It molds and some Rain's bubble shots. Is it that what you want?
I guess so, man. I guess so. Man, those spots were fat, though, dude. It made you want to go. It really did. It made you want to go out there and try and catch those spots. Crazy.
And I'm not going to lie, the last day at Conroe, when you saw the guys putting 20-plus fish on the board, made you want to go fishing because, heck, they're biting.
Yeah.
You can go out and catch them. There were some people fishing at Conroe who were catching them. Not in the tournament.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting question by Tyler. College saying, do you guys think the MLF events are too long? We'll get into that on Wednesday. You know, that's a good question. Way too long. How many average minutes do you think people are watching this thing?
Well, the first one, based on the minutes and what they gave it out, was 17.1.
Yeah. That's not very much when you're on for 5.5, 6 hours or whatever. Anyway, we'll get into that. All right, everybody, I want to thank you for hanging out with us on a Monday. We apologize for Paul Mueller not being available, but we will try and get him on tomorrow. Matthew, good week this week. Stay warm. Be careful, everybody. Be safe. We will talk to you tomorrow. Brad Hallman in studio. We're out of here.